When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I've got so much love for the club and the people of this club. Players I've played with, coaching staff, to the fans. I've loved every minute. Although I've played at many clubs, like this is my club. So.
P&E Pod.
Preston, take the lead!
Official Preston North End podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the official Preston North End podcast. This is P&E Pod. My name's Niall McCorn.
And I'm Neil Mellor. We'll be talking to some P&E legends, some first team players, some famous fans, and some former teammates of mine.
And it is a first team player who we're chatting to today, P&E defender Greg Cunningham on the show.
And he wasn't always a defender. He tells us, and he's very honest, what position he actually was when he came over to England.
Just to let you know that there is a little bit of squeamish content in this podcast, so just a little warning. And don't forget to hit subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts, and that way you'll never miss an episode of P&E Pod again. But without further ado, let's hear from P&E first team player Greg Cunningham. Recording this the day after Huddersfield. How are the legs this morning?
Yeah, they're not too bad. I'll be feeling it later, but I'll be in my Normatec for the day, so should be okay.
Are you suggesting he's a bit of an old man now?
Just saying, it was a hard fought 4-1 win.
He's in his 30s, that's all.
you said it, not me. I guess you class yourself as one of the more experienced players now. You've been at a number of clubs, you've played in the Championship loads, so I guess you feel like you can offer that to the group.
Yeah, I can. That's part of me as a person as well, that if there's anything I can help players coming through or anything, I'm here for it. And I think it's the role as a senior player to make sure that you can kind of give your experience off to younger boys and help them in any way you can.
Who were some of the other senior boys in that dressing room with you?
Ched's there, Brownie's there, Robbie. Considering there's a few kind of, I wouldn't say young squad, but like, you know, mid-20s, boys are quite experienced for their age. But you're probably talking about that, like, I'm quite vocal in the change room in different ways.
You're one of the characters in there.
I'm probably just the loudest, like, you probably ask different people, they have different opinions on me, but yeah, I probably am the loudest, like, the way seasons go in football, like, it's so up and down that it's important to kind of keep morale as high as you can and make sure that there's kind of a good atmosphere around the place when sometimes when results aren't going your way, and then when they are going your way, it's important to kind of make sure you're keeping that momentum going. So I try and keep things as lively as possible around the changing room.
By doing what?
No. I never get any stories out of me. I don't do podcasts over here.
I've lived with Irish men before as a young player. I know what you're like.
quite PG, but it's good to just have a laugh and a joke and that. And then when times are serious, they're serious. But you know, it's about enjoying having the best job in the world. You know.
I never got to play, after 30, you're in your 30s. Does the manager come to you as an experienced player at times and sort of see how it is because you're a big character in the dressing room?
I think with the squad we have, there's so much togetherness that your gaffer can go around to everyone and get kind of similar answers on how everyone's feeling. I think at this club at the minute, the dressing room runs itself with regards to, I suppose, the ethos of what we're about in there. You know, the roles, responsibilities of players, discipline, attitude, application, all that is driven, you know, within the change room. The gaffer allows that and encourages that. So, you know, we hold our meetings every now and then in the change room to see how we're all feeling, how we're all doing and stuff, and constantly kind of looking at the next step to drive the club and the squad forward.
Good Irish connection at North End as well. Yourself,
Brownie, yeah.
Will Keane.
Yeah. There's been a lot over the years. I always say the more the merrier, you know. We create a nice kind of dynamic to a change room, I suppose.
Growing up in Galway, you left for Manchester City quite young to start your career in English football. Tough to leave home at that age, or was that something you were comfortable with at the time?
I was quite comfortable. I look back now, 16's quite young. And I know with Brexit and that, players can't get across now until they're 18 or over. So that's kind of changed again, the whole approach of Irish players going abroad.
Don't the Irish boys come a year earlier? Don't you finish school earlier than us in England?
Yeah, so what usually happens is the equivalent of players that do their GCSEs, but I came across at 16. So I did my first year of a 2-year kind of course, which kind of be equivalent to A-levels. So I did my first year of the Leaving Cert, and that was one of the main reasons I went to Man City. Before the money, might I add. They could do the education part, where my parents were really focused on, I finished my education, because the amount of people that go across and the amount of people that make it is quite low. So if it's a case where I'd signed a 3-year deal at Man City, if it didn't work out, I would be maybe a couple of years behind my classmates at uni. So Man City could do the education part, where when I had narrowed it down after your trials and stuff.
Who were the other clubs? It narrowed it down. It sounded like there was a few after you.
It was Celtic, Newcastle and Man City. And Man City were the only ones that could do the Irish Leaving Cert education part. They came over and met my school. I got tutors for when the boys would do their BTEC or some would go to the college and do A-levels. I did my tuition from a Leaving Cert. I think that kept me quite focused as well, where I didn't have a lot of idle time, because after training, and especially in the academy, you're doing double days, so you're finishing about 4-ish anyways. Get back to the digs, you have some dinner, and then I had, whether it was on Skype, I had Irish Grinds or Maths or whatever, or the tuition would come to the house. And that kind of kept me focused, in a sense, where I didn't have time to think about being homesick or being away from everyone and missing out and stuff. And I was quite focused from young, like, to make sure that I'll give it everything. And if it didn't work out, it wasn't down to lack of discipline or application or whatever. And that's kind of the way it's gone.
Who were some of the lads in that youth team with you at City at the time?
I had Kieran Trippier, was with us. Dedrick Boyata, played for Celtic, Union Berlin.
A Belgian international?
Yeah. Robbie Mack, Slovakian striker.
So Trippier's the big name straight away.
Trippier's a big one, yeah.
You keep
in
touch.
Dedrick, like. Yeah, well, we'd say the last time I probably saw him was when we played Spurs when I was at Cardiff. Had a good catch-up. You know the way football goes, like.
So that's quite a few to come through, because a lot of youth teams don't get as many as that comes.
Yeah, but even the year before, like, Ben Mee was the captain of that FA Youth Cup winning team. Me and Ched always talk about, because obviously Ched was at City as well, like, so. And we're having a few chats and that nostalgia comes back about those kind of older days, which is a couple of years ago now.
So when you step forward and training with the first team, City were nowhere near the side they were now, are they?
Nowhere near, but they started to get the money in. So every kind of transfer window or summer break, you'd come back and Carrington would be done up, or the new players would be coming. I think Rubinho was kind of one of the main kind of ones that come in, and then they start. Tevez, Nigel de Jong, Balotelli, all those are in. And
Are you made up, or are you thinking, hang on? Don't forget me.
I probably didn't soak it up as much at the time. I think you're just kind of rolling with it. I think that's the way I've always been as a person. I don't kind of overthink too much and just kind of roll with how things are going to a certain degree. But
players were in your position?
Clichy was there. Kolarov.
Okay, yeah.
Silvino was there. Wayne Bridge. So there was a lot of
internationals.
Top class left back. So you know you're kind of, your minutes are limited, like, even coming through, but just trying to soak up as much as you could, like, at a couple of pre-seasons with them and that, which was
did you like any of them? Because of someone in your position, you get on with someone.
You're a kid, like, at the same time, and you know, these are, like you said, world-class players. So you know your place.
No. I said internationals. I never said world-class players. You said that.
Game of opinions football. Yeah. but it's just, I think looking back, it was quite cool. And they were really nice to everyone around the place. You know, there was one fella, actually, Martin Petrov. Remember the winger?
Yeah.
Was he Bulgarian?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
He was probably the only one that just didn't, like, he'd walk past you like you weren't there.
Blanked you.
Yeah, just one of those. And it was, when we go up to the res, it was always like, you'd have to obviously be polite and say good morning and stuff like that. So you'd say, oh, morning, Martin, whatever, and just straight past you. So but then probably he would have been the only real one. All the other one were really, really good to the young boys and stuff. Yeah, it was cool.
Debut against Scunthorpe in the FA Cup. Did Petrov play? Did he blank you that day?
No, I think he was gone by then. But I remember that day because I'd been in the squads just before or just after Christmas. It was Mark Hughes' last game in charge. And then Berto Mancini came in and kind of still been around the squads. And it was a case where you're not in the squad, so where do we go and sit in that? So into the changing room at Scunthorpe and was kind of saying like, oh, what's the story in that? So I've just gone to the manager and said, oh, boss, like, where will I go and stuff? And he was like, oh, you're on the bench. I was thinking,
God. So this is Mancini?
This is Mancini, yeah. So on the bench, buzzing. And then halftime, told to get warm. And yeah, you're just...
So you've not really had a chance to tell your family or friends tickets?
No. They were all, like, they'd all just be watching anyways. Like, I think it was on ITV. So they all would have been watching and come on at halftime. Yellow card on 46. And then you just kind of roll from there. Like, so yeah, dream come true. And it's the only way to describe it, really. You know, I think...
Did you keep the shirt? Did you get it signed?
Yeah. I kept it. I've been so bad for...
What was your number? What was your squad number?
45. 45. And then it got taken off me by Balotelli.
Oh, Balotelli took it off you? He said, I want that number.
Yeah, he said he'd come in like you want. So I was like, yeah, listen.
What was he like? Because we've heard some mad stories over the years about Mario Balotelli with all the fireworks and everything like that.
Probably just a young kid on serious amount of money. Like, but as far as a person, he was a really nice fella.
Did he ask you for the number or did someone else say, listen?
Just kind of info, like the club had kind of said it, but he wasn't stepping on toes and just said, like, if it's available.
He's like, it's not, I've got it.
And again, you're like, this fella's coming in for X amount of money. It's probably asked in a question that there's only one answer. Yeah. So it's like, oh, listen, do you mind? And then if you say, well, yeah, I kind of do. It's like, all right, no problem. Well, we're giving him it anyway. So it was grand. I was like,
what did you get? What number did you get after?
It's quite embarrassing. So I ended up getting 22 and then Gail Clichy came in shortly after.
And he took it off you.
And I actually said, like, listen, I'm not being funny here, but I backed myself a little bit. And I said, listen, I'm a left back. You're bringing in a left back. It's taken my number or whatever. I mean, it didn't work out. He got the number, like, and then I was pushed to 33, and that was kind of the way it was.
Are you superstitious with numbers? Because I know some players are, aren't they? They're really, really
I like
bothered.
Three. I'm kind of old school in a sense of like the 1-2-11 kind of thing. But I was a striker back in the day, and then you slowly get shifted back.
Why didn't you carry on being a striker?
Couldn't hit a band. I don't know. Just it was the academy year where.
City signed you as a left back, not a striker.
No, signed a striker.
They signed you as a striker.
Signed a striker, and then academy year, I played like a 4-3-3, so I played left. And then in my academy year, the left back got injured in pre-season, and academy manager asked me, would I fill in? I think there's only two left for us at the time.
What are you thinking? No, I don't want to play left back.
I was like, left back. And I said, I think it was like crew at Alsager, because we used to go to Alsager University for pre-season. Quite grounding, like. and you stay in the dorms and that. It was good. And then I played left back for one game and he was like, do you know what? We like you there. So I was thinking, oh, right. So then he swapped. The left back went to kind of left wing and I went back to left back. And he was like, I like your height back there. So I was like, fine. And then that's kind of where it started. And here I am now.
Yeah, you played a few first team games for Manchester City. Then you get your first loan move. Go to Leicester.
Yeah.
What was that like as an experience going out on loan for the first time?
It's nerve-wracking, like, because I think... whether you're a kid or not, or you're going to a new club, or you're going off on loan, like, you have to hit the ground running because you only get a first impression once. So, you know, you've been at City and you've had a couple of cameos, you've been around the squads and stuff, and it's like, right now I need to go and start making a name for myself.
Where were Leicester back then?
Were they champ? Yeah.
Was it Sven-Göran Eriksson, the manager?
Yeah, Galli was there.
Okay.
So I used to do Galli's decoy runs and he'd just come in and his right foot and then whip it in.
Oh, tell us about Sven. What was he like?
He was class, yeah. So relaxed. Never too far up, never too far down. I remember we played Ipswich away. It was the snow day. It was 2010. And it was literally bucketing down. I was thinking, oh, the game's off, no way. Get to Ipswich, still bucketing down, get to the stadium, thinking, what's going on here? But carried on. Game started, it was on TV, and Roy Keane was manager of Ipswich, and I know he'd been banging on the ref's door, making sure that everything was good. We went 3-0 down after about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And I mean, like, the ball's coming and you go to clear it and it hits a bubble of snow and you shank it. So that was my excuse anyways. But like, you couldn't play on it. You couldn't see. Get in at halftime, still same thing, still pouring down. They're trying to sweep it off. Again, Roy Keane's needing the 3 points and you've been under pressure at Ipswich. We go out for the second half, come back in after an hour. And again, we're like, what is going on here? Surely it's off. Finish the game, lose 3-0. And we're just sat there in the changes, feeling like, oh. Sven comes in and you're thinking, oh, how's he going to go about it here? Like, how fast? You know, was a battle there, not the more, whatever. He comes in, he said, lads, probably just one thing. And everyone's looking at him. He's like, we're no good on snow. So let's get showered and go home. And that was it. And he was like, right, on to the next one. And he was just, yeah, I think his man management was second to none. Like, for, I think as a manager, you're managing the people that aren't involved, because the boys that are playing manage themselves. You know, they're happy, no complaints, they're ticking away. It's the boys that aren't involved, that aren't getting the minutes, aren't getting any sugar on the weekend, that you have to make sure on site. And he was so good at that. So like, the whole squad was just all for it. Because you know the way changing rooms can be, like, you get a few sticky results, you know, chopping up, and it's the boys that aren't involved, and he should do this and he should do that. But everyone was just pulling in the right direction. And it was a great experience. It was just good short injury.
What was his team talks like? Was he a shouter? Was he?
No. But when he talked, you could hear a pin drop. Like, every word that he spoke, everyone was listening. He didn't need to raise his voice. It was just whatever he said was spot on. And he was very good. Such a likable character, yeah.
You said that the spell at Leicester was cut short due to injury. You actually fractured your leg in a challenge with Liam Rossini. Is it one of those things where, because you've had that quite nasty injury, because of a challenge with him, there's a little bit of hostility there?
I suppose you kind of always hold a bit of a grudge, but things happen in football.
Was it his fault?
I don't like to point fingers. I have to take responsibility for my naivety going into that challenge. You know, I was a 19-year-old, New Year's Day, looking to impress. And it shouldn't have been a tackle that I should have gone anywhere near, within reason. I think it was just solely fixing the ball. The ball broke. I've gone to sprint for it and somehow ended up into a bit of a 50-50. And I've just toe-poked it away. And then the tackle's come in. It set me back, obviously, time-wise, when things were obviously just going so well. Got into the Ireland team and there kind of been a lot of talk and stuff, and I was just enjoying life and living kind of the dream that I've always wanted, and all of a sudden in the space of a tackle, it's just gone. I've bumped into him loads, I've played against him. Of course, you kind of hold a bit of a grudge. You have to, like, I'm only human, like, but it's football, these things happen.
When you're that young and you have an injury like that, how dark a place do you go to, and how difficult is that to get over?
Yeah, I think as I've got older, you learn to box your emotions with work. At that age, like, I remember I was in the hospital in Hull and my old man flew over and I was like, that's it, it's done. Like, how do you come back from that? At a compound fracture, fib. I saw my tibia sticking out of my leg, like, and you're thinking, how do I come back from that at 19? Like, you think, that's it. Without going into too much detail, it was just like a, and then I was like, oh, and the worst sort of throbbing pins and needles you've ever had. Yeah, it was tough, like, everything just felt really, really good. And I felt good in myself and I felt confident in how things were going under Sven at Leicester. And I had the injury and, you know, I had a few visitors into the hospital, which I was very grateful with. David Myler came in and Paul McShane came in at the time, which was a really nice touch.
Was it Irish lads only coming in?
The door was open. But they came in with, you know, some Tails and Club Orange and a quick chat. And, you know, stuff like that kind of sticks with you. But then your loan's up, like, and you go back to your parent club. And in fairness, I've got a lovely big poster that I got framed on the wall, which is a picture of me with my first game for Leicester, which is Swansea away. All the boys had signed it and stuff, and it's up on my wall still. So that was a nice touch from the club. And my mum moved over for 2 months because, like, I couldn't make a cup of tea. Yeah. Couldn't go and sit down and trying to get in and out the shower. And it's like, mentally a very, very tough place. But like I said, it builds resilience. And I had the best medical staff that I could ask for at Man City, you know. And I think in a way,
and I always look at injuries. It can happen at junior football where, like, my brother broke his leg and he's waiting for the ambulance for like 45 minutes before he gets to the hospital. You know what I mean? So I was straight in the hospital at the operation that evening. I'm out the hospital 3 days later and I'm starting my recovery with, you know, and it's my job to get back fit. So I don't have to worry about your boys that get injured playing the sport they love as a hobby and they've got to go to work the next day. So I think it's probably just my mindset to try and look for positives in that sense.
Have you had your family tell you what some of the fans have said? My brother used to watch me everywhere and he used to say, God, fans have been on you today. How have you missed that chance? Yeah. Like, why are you telling me?
Yeah,
I don't want to
hear.
So your family must have been in the whatever, home end, away end, and maybe you've not had a good game.
My mum was big in the forums. But she used to
under a real name or a fake name?
No, she used to always go and check, like, and see what people are saying. And I used to be like, get off it, because there can be a lot of nasty stuff said. But then she'll find, like, she'll know that I'll have a good game, and then she'll check, say, oh, do you know, you're doing really well. And the fan, I said, get off it, because next week, yeah, my head will be on a platter.
But not in the ground. My brother got chucked out once for, I scored a goal in an FA Cup game for Sheffield Wednesday at Southport away, and he over celebrated and he ended up getting chucked out.
Wait, do you want to
he got chucked out. So your family have been well behaved in that sense.
Yeah, no, they're good like that, like, because I think the way I act is a representation of my family too. So without taking emotion out of it, you have to kind of make sure that you're on an even keel.
It sounds like Sven was pretty influential in the early stages of your career, even if it was only for a short period. So when the news came out about his illness?
Yeah, it's awful. Like, I used to believe in karma in a sense. I was having a conversation with a couple of lads before that, like, oh, good things happen to good people and karma will come around in that. But then you see so much that makes you think, oh, I'm not so sure anymore, you know? Like, from my experience with him, he was a lovely man and a great manager. It's not easy life. It's not easy. And life is very precious. It's very sad.
Where does he rank with the best managers, coaches you've had?
I've been very lucky. Like, I've worked with some really, really top managers. And as far as I'm concerned with man management, like, second to none. Definitely the best man manager I've ever worked with. Makes you just enjoy doing your job and enjoy playing football. And even when results might be going your way, he was the one that was making sure that everything was good in camp. And it was always a good environment to work in. And as a young lad, 19, playing, he made it very easy for me to kind of enjoy football.
Before we get to North End, I wanted to ask you, because you were at City when they won the league for the first time, am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
2010, 2011. Yeah. So were you was the broken leg?
It was, yeah. So I finished my loan at Forest. So I came back from my leg break October time and went out on loan to Forest straight away.
But were you back at City for all the league celebrations? Is this the Aguero season?
I was back, and I think a couple of weeks before it finished, they ended up saying, oh, do a bit of training and then you can finish. Because I was like, listen, I've come back from my injury and I've gone straight out on loan and I've played X amount of games. I don't want to be back here training for nothing, because I would have been training with the Rezzies.
So go on, tell us, were you around the team?
No,
the training?
I was at home. I was back in Ireland. So
you said that you wanted an early dart at the end of the season. You went back to Ireland and you missed the most memorable Premier League moment ever.
I ended up watching on the telly and I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? But it's just the way I just thought, look, I've had a draining season. I think I want to get home. I think it was more a case where I would have been training with the Rezzies and do nothing for about 2 weeks. And I was thinking, I've been out on loan all year. Let me just go back home and get the extra 10 days or whatever. Yeah, one for the ages, wasn't it? I just can't believe I wasn't there.
P&E Pod, from legends to leaders. The best guests from inside Deepdale.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
P&E Pod, the official podcast of the one and only Preston North End.
When you signed for North End, as you mentioned, you signed and became a regular under Simon Grayson. You captained the side at times when Tom Clark was injured. What do you remember of those early days at North End when you first came into the team and started to bed in?
Best time of my career, playing my best football on a regular basis, which was just a consistent level. For me as a type of player, it's consistency, because I know what I am, I know what my strengths are, and I know what I'm not good at. So for me, it's about making sure that you perform on a consistent basis so that a manager knows that they can trust you and what the job you have to do. And I was playing at a consistently decent level that season. Manager like me was playing every week. I settled in really well. And yeah, it was the best time of my career.
Does North End feel like your club?
Yeah. I've always said that. I think they say, like, when you leave, you don't come back. But when the opportunity arose, like, I was never turning it down. I love it at this club, and I'm quite open about it. And I'm very grateful for the other clubs I've played for. And when I was there, I've give everything, but I think it's no secret that I play my best football here and I give everything for this club. And yeah, it's home for me.
Even though you played some Premier League games with Cardiff?
It's mad, because Cardiff was probably the worst time of my career, and it should have been the best. So although I ticked the box and lived a dream and got some Prem games, psychologically, mentally, emotionally, the worst time of my career. I go there and it's an opportunity I can't turn down.
Who's the manager that took you there?
Neil Warnock. You're having conversations that then ultimately don't happen when you go there. And yeah, it wasn't.
So you've only left Preston to go to a Premier League club. You wouldn't have left otherwise.
No. And sort of going into my last year, I wanted to stay. I was enjoying the project that was under Alex Neil, and I was really enjoying my football under him. And it was the season where there was no doubt in my mind. I was just get in there, because when we get in there, we are, whatever way it goes, we're winning at Deepdale. We're getting the result we need, and then it's a one-off at Wembley, and I think it's only one winner then.
If that was maybe a regret, what are some of the more positive moments and memories that you've had over the hundreds of games that you've played for North End now?
Probably getting the hundreds of games for North End. I'll look back over my career, and I'm still only 33, and I keep reiterating that I've got a lot of years left in me, but it sounds kind of not corny, but I've lived the dream that I had as a kid, and that many kids have and never get to do. For all of the roller coaster of emotions it's been, it's all part of the pressures and the love of football. Like, it's never straightforward. And you look back and think, for the tough times, that it makes you into a stronger player or a stronger person mentally. And for the good times, because there's not many good times in football.
I've written down the goals you've scored for North End. This isn't too long.
It's not long. I could probably name a few.
One of them was against your former team, Bristol City.
Yes. Yes.
Did you celebrate that? What did you
Yes,
do?
I did. Yeah. I left and I went to Preston, and it went the way it went. And it was the best move for me football wise. Obviously, the manager in charge was the manager to let me go, Steve Cottrell, who I worked with at Forest. He brought me to Forest for my loan after the injury, and he was in charge when I left and stuff.
Ex-Burnley, it's fine.
Yeah, it's grand. But emotion flies. And I think every time you play, you're always proving points, like whether it's against a former team or it's, you know, proving to yourself again where you've been out for a while and you start to question a few things.
Yeah. So from that list, was there a good goal out of all the ones you've scored? Is the one that sticks out?
The way you asked that made it
well,
sound
like
none of them.
Well, I've got one, two,
really
three,
good.
Four. I've got six, am I right?
Blackburn. That was it. That was a nice one. Pity there wasn't a crowd there. It would have been quite cool.
COVID.
Yeah, it was COVID.
What was COVID like as a player?
It was mad, because I like playing on the opposite side of the bench, because you just get on with the game. So there's no one in your ear. You're not hearing a lot. Like, you're just away, and you can just kind of play the game. But in COVID, like...
Was it like resi games?
It was, because it was literally, you could hear a pin drop. Where usually a coach or a manager would say something, it wouldn't get anywhere near the pitch because the noise. You hear everything. So you're getting hammered by the manager and he's over the other side of the pitch and you just hear everything. And it was quite weird, because when you go out and the crowd's roaring and the adrenaline's going and you're pumped up for it, like, it, you just go and you play and you're in it. But you have to manufacture that during COVID, like, and you have to try and get yourself up for what feels like a training ground game, but could have a lot on the line for it. I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
So with the players saying, I hate this.
Yeah. I did. Like, it's soulless. Like,
just a quick one on crowd. Is there any team supporters that are giving you a little bit of stick? You're thinking, why are you giving me so much stick?
Millwall away, obviously, Millwall away. The straightforward one. Like, you know, you're getting called all sorts by 9, 10-year-old kids that are getting a pat on the head from the father behind them and stuff. And you're thinking, hold on.
You mentioned living a dream. You picked up 4 Ireland caps.
Mm.
Was that a bit of a dream as well to realize that and represent the national team?
Yeah, I look back over my career and stuff, and first and foremost, like, to play for your country at any level, but to obviously go up the ranks and play at senior level was, again, a dream come true. To have my first cap at 19 and only have 4, I look back and think, you should have a lot more than that.
Why do you feel like you didn't get more? Because Trapattoni was a manager at the time, gave you your caps.
Timing of injuries, maybe, out of favour. Whatever reasons, I'm not sure. But I look back and think 4 is not enough when you have 1 at 19.
Who were some of the characters in the Ireland squad when you were there?
Kevin Caban was, obviously, he was left back at the time. And he was really, really good to me. Because I kind of felt and I was ready to kind of step up then, as it were. So he was really good. Shea Given was at City with me at the time. Robbie Keane, after my debut, he got man of the match against Algeria and he gave me the man of the match trophy.
So should you have got it anyway?
nowhere near it. But like little things like that. Got to play behind Damien Duff, which was class. So play with John O'Shea. There's, around that squad, like, is, we'd say, I would look at the pretty much the 2002 World Cup squad. And then you're in the mixer with them. And it's, again, quite cool, great experience and memories kind of sort of for life, you know.
When you were coming through as a youngster, with some of these being your sort of heroes?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I mean. And then you're in the mixer with them. And for me, I couldn't enjoy it or thrive off it as much because I'm thinking, I need to do well here. So kind of when you get a little bit more relaxed and you can kind of, you get a little bit older, you can enjoy it a bit more and things come off and train, they don't come off, where I'm thinking to myself, I can't make a mistake here because you're fresh in the squad. You need to make impressions. You know, you can't be just lax in everything you do and it's a big jolly up. Like, this is a chance for me to make a bit of a mark or show, like, in a way, what I'm about. So you kind of have your serious mode in, but at the same time, looking back, it was class.
Who were some of your favorite players growing up then?
I was a big Liverpool fan. Like,
we talked about Fowler.
Fowler, Gerrard. Michael Owen, any other strikers.
No, left backs. Who was your left backs?
Well, I was a striker. So, but I loved watching Liverpool. I was lucky enough to go over as a kid, like, to watch a few games, which was cool.
Any games stick out?
Olympiacos one.
Who scored in that?
Steady on. I know what you're getting at here.
You got a little tap in, didn't you?
Tap in, yeah, the old count.
And then it was the Carragher, cushioned header, Gerrard, half volley. Yeah, unreal. It's like, because my dad's a Liverpool fan, so then obviously a Liverpool fan as well. So something that we enjoyed together. And
your brother's a United fan?
Yeah, so my uncle's a United fan and he was first born, so he kind of got into him and got him kind of all the United jerseys and all that. So somehow the old man allowed it. But after that, then I was a Liverpool fan through.
You ever played against Liverpool in your career?
No. It would have been, in the cup. Sorry. Yeah, in the cup. We played them at Preston a couple of years back in the cup. But as far as the league, it was one of those Cardiff where I was like, oh, please just give me Liverpool at Anfield and plonk on the bench. But cool experience. But that would have been, that would probably, small things of that probably would have turned a tough time to say, actually, do you know what? I got to play at Anfield, so that would have been the biggest take in a career highlight. Like,
what were some of the games in your career so far where the atmosphere has been, what a game, what an atmosphere that was? Which are the ones that stand out?
Arsenal in the cup, a full house of detail under the lights, 5:30 kickoff. We went 1-0 up. We ended up losing 2-1, but it was absolutely bouncing. And again, under the lights, crisp January evening, like, it was. For me, that stood out the most. Where when people ask, I look back, that was class.
What about Burnley, Blackpool?
Yeah, Cameron Archer. That was on telly 2 years ago, I think. Cameron Archer scored 1-0.
Great goal as well.
Yeah. Again, under the lights. I think everything under the lights just adds that extra bit, doesn't it, as a player?
What was it like to lose against him? I was there when you got brought off. Changed the game. 1-1 at Blackpool. Oh, changed the game.
Yeah.
Greg comes off, end up losing 4-2. Why did you come off?
I was dying. Okay. Yeah. I shouldn't have been anywhere near it.
Changed the game.
I was hanging on for dear life that game. Hughesy was injured at the time, and I was thinking that I have to play, but I had nothing in me, and literally was a shadow for most of the game, where I was just thinking, oh my God, I've got nothing in me here. And if they knock one down the sides here, like, I could just keel over.
You've done well.
And then it was that point. 65, was it? Yeah. Something like that. And then I was thinking, I'm dying here. I'm gone.
What's the hurt like in the dressing room? For big games like that.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And, you know, emotions are high. Tempers are kind of going.
A few words getting said.
Yeah. And I think that's quite normal. And I think maybe that's sometimes the problem, that senior players especially, and it's not a case of all seniors and young lads, but like senior players can dish it out, take it, and then it's done. You know what I mean? And you know, there's no grudges. But I think now certain change rooms can be a little bit kind of, you have to be careful and we need to get the best out of him and you don't want to knock his confidence, etc. But if people aren't pulling their weight, like, or something's not happening, because there's so much at stake. Even if you are mid-table or whatever, and there might be anything to play for, but if it's a derby game or anything like that, and people aren't chucking their weight, or someone's made a costly mistake that they could have prevented for whatever reason, well, you got to tell them, like, because you can't just allow it to go and everyone's high-fiving each other and it's great in the changing room. You just lost the game.
So you've not been dragged off at half-time?
Surely a gaffer.
Oh, I've had a few half-time drags.
Yeah. You must have had some dressing downs off of gaffers over the years, like, surely.
Yeah. Neil Warnock.
Did he just do it just because he did it to everyone?
He didn't do it to everyone. He kind of had his view to a certain degree.
I'm sensing you're not liking. He's a character in the game, isn't he? I mean, he's managed about 50 clubs.
Yeah, and his record is very impressive.
You didn't get on.
Yeah, I don't know. He had his core group, and that's fine. I wasn't part of it. Posed the question, why you bring me to the club then? I remember we lost to United at home, thinking that it had been 5-0. I could drop for the next game, which was fine. I didn't play much yet. I was expecting it. And then we were leaving to go to Leicester. Kevin Black was gone. Oh, great. Gaffer wants to see you in the video room. So I was like, all right, fine. And then you almost think, could be in here or whatever. Mm-hmm. Open the door, go in, and I see a big United crest on the screen. And I look at him and he's like, sit down. And he goes through the 5 goals and I get blamed for the 5 goals. And we end up, I said, no, I'm like, to the point now where I think it was around Christmas time, maybe. And I was like, no, I'm not having this, like, and my head flew off and we had a few words and I said, I'm just a scapegoat, like. And then his phone was ringing and he was getting agitated. And then we just had a few words and Blackwell was trying to like calm everything and stuff. And I said, no, it's box, like, you're just having me off and I'm the scapegoat here, and went through some of the stuff. And then he's like, no, I took a phone call, and I said, right, fair enough. So we went on the bus and I was just red. And then it's the usual, like, on the phone to the old man, on the phone to the agent, like, get me out of here, da, da, da. And then I get to the hotel and he's like, Greg, son, over here. I was like, right, maybe he's going to apologize or whatever. And he's going, you're starting tomorrow. And I was like, and you're just like, what? And he's like, right, that's it. Got up, walked in, played against Leicester the next day.
What was the score? It wasn't a 5-1.
We won 1-0.
1-0.
You must have come up against Warnock since then a few times.
Yes. I'm not going over, like, shaking his hand, asking him how he is. Like, not for me at all. No, not for me. And I probably don't say it out loud. I probably haven't said that to anyone. Like, and it's probably not the best time to say it on a podcast, but not for me at all.
He ain't listening, don't worry.
Thoughts about what you might do after your playing days are over at all? Have you thought about that yet?
Football's my life. So finishing off my A license at the minute. So I'll have that in my back pocket for when the time comes.
Do you want to be a manager?
I'd like to be involved in football in some capacity. I'll definitely do coaching, whether it progresses to getting an opportunity in the front seat. Yeah, I don't see why not.
Who's been one of your best mates in football and at Preston?
Brownie. Yeah, Brownie. I've known Brownie for years. Irish connection. And Neil Burns, one of my best mates. We were together at Forest. He's at Stockport now.
Big centre-half.
Yeah.
Lives by me.
Yeah. There he actually, go. I was talking to him for a... Well, I said, I'm not going to drop your name in unless he mentioned it. Because he said, oh, he lives by me. I see him every now and then. But yeah, Neil Brown would be one of my best mates, and Brownie.
Favourite game at Deepdale and favourite game for Preston? Maybe it's been somewhere else.
Burnley away.
and then won it deep down. That Arsenal one, even though you lost it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, or the Blackpool one when Cam Archer scored. They were kind of the ones that are sticking my head a little bit.
Finally then, if you could sum up Preston in a sentence or two, what would you say?
Oh, I've got so much love for the club and the people of this club, from players I've played with to coaching staff to backroom staff to people in the offices to the fans. I think I've loved every minute. And although this season, you know, minutes have been quite limited, like I've always tried to give everything I can. And yeah, it's like I said before, it's been my home away from home. And although I've played at many clubs, like this is my club.
P&E Pod, the official podcast of Preston North End. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search P&E Pod.
Thanks for listening to another episode of P&E Pod. If you enjoyed that, then don't forget to hit subscribe or follow and you'll never miss another episode of the show again. And there are loads of other great interviews in the back catalogue, so go there and check it out.
P&E Pod, the official Preston North End podcast. This is a VoiceWorks sport production for Preston North End FC.
Sports Social Podcast Network.